Hi, I'm Minka, and you're listening to The Sane Space. We are the first South African climbing podcast, we think. And we're super excited to talk to South African climbers about climbing and also some of the tough stuff. Stick around. We are committed to releasing an episode on the last Wednesday of every month, and then possibly a special edition in between. End your month on a high note with us.
Hot damn. Can you believe 1 year has passed since the first episode of The Sane Space was launched? We have heard about the Olympic ego, open relationships, self-worth, small business owning. Oh yeah, and a bit of climbing in between. How cool is that? Now, I have a message for all the trad dads, the climbing masters, and the general crushers. The Gumbies, thank you! We thank you for your patience. We thank you for indulging us sometimes. And we thank you for believing in us. Cheers to another year of supporting one another. May the approaches be smooth and the sends be fast. I'd like to quickly mention the local climbing brands who sponsored prizes for our first birthday giveaway. Block 11 Studio, City Rock, Good Beta, Scallywags, Climbable, Climb Out Jersey, and Vertigo Gear. Thank you for collaborating with us. Those prizes looked so cool. I actually really wanted to enter myself. And of course, to the senders, you guys. Hey, you. Thanks for giving us your attention. Thank you for sharing your ideas and trusting us with constructive criticism. We've learned so much in the past year, and obviously the learning will never stop. But in the meantime, we've decided to shake things up and try something new. Which brings us to the next episode. Every alternate episode will be a Sane Space short, a swift but gripping tale or interview, anywhere between 15 and 30-ish minutes, to cater for those senders with commitment issues. Don't worry, you're welcome here, and in good company. Here's the short.
Okay, hi senders, we're standing here with KP. It is still the 19th of February. The date hasn't changed since earlier. Congratulations. KP set some of the routes for the competition that we're at today. KP, how many of these boulder sets did you set?
I set three of them. I think in total we have about 16. Yeah.
Okay, why don't you explain the competition format to the listeners that don't really know a lot about competition climbing in South Africa?
So today's bouldering with boulders, you have two places to get points, really. You have the top, which you get the most points for, and the zone, which is in the middle. And then we count how many attempts it takes you to get to the places, and we count, and we look at the time. You have about 4 minutes for every boulder. So for every attempt that you take to get to the top or to the zone, the person who gets there the fewest is the person who gets the highest point. So how we end up scoring it at the end is we say who had the most tops. Okay, put that person at the top, and then we count zones to separate them there. Well, count the attempts first to separate them there. Then we count zones after that, and then we count attempts on that too.
And do we also have lead in the competition?
Yes, lead will start tomorrow. And for lead, it's about how high you can get on the wall. So every hold has a point, and then if you move off of a hold and don't just in the direction of the next hold, you get a plus. So if you fall off on this one route, halfway is about hold number 14. If you move off of it and then fall off and don't touch or don't hold on the next hold, you get 14 plus. And then you have a time limit, 6 minutes to get to the top. Our walls aren't long enough for that, so hopefully no one will finish the 6 minutes, but yeah.
Okay, cool. Was it the first time that you've set for a competition?
I've set for nationals before. Earlier this year, I set for Africa Cup as well. And then I've set for GC competitions, City Rock competitions, Friends and Allies competitions and stuff all over.
Let's talk about the African Continental Championships and the setting faux pas that occurred at Friends and Allies for the boulder section. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Tell me about what happened with men's final boulder, I think it's number 4, that ended up getting disqualified because there was a dispute from one of the athletes.
So the dispute was that it was a downwards jump. which is an illegal move. How it was set is that it wasn't a downwards jump. There was just an issue because the boulder was taken down for qualifiers and then reset for finals. And what had happened was one of the feet was placed in the wrong place, about two boulders lower, which is quite a big difference. In the speed and the rush of things, I think we just got distracted.
Okay, so it could have been a downwards dyno, but the beta was actually to do it in a static manner.
So the hold was in the wrong place. So with the where it was, it ended up being a downwards dyno, but it wasn't intended to be. So what we've done with this competition is that, because we have had to move holds around, is that we actually mark them to make sure that we put them back in the same place and the same orientation and everything.
I actually saw that not only the wall was marked, but the holds as well, which is different to what was happening at Africa Champs, right?
Yes. So at Africa Champs, we just took photos. Here we marked on the holds and on the walls, so just to make sure that the angles are also perfectly the same as when we forehand them.
Amazing. So who disputed that boulder?
I'm not actually sure, because I was busy setting for the lead when that was happening.
Oh, I remember you weren't actually there. I'm just throwing you in the deep end right now.
Yeah, you actually are, but it's fine. I know enough. Bad on us for making the mistake.
So what is the kind of IFSC procedure? When are you supposed to raise a dispute?
Anyone is free to raise a dispute whenever. If they see it and they have proof and evidence, then yeah, they can lay a claim with a jury president.
Okay. You've also done quite a few competitions in your time. When was the last time you competed?
Ooh, I don't even remember. I think the last time I competed was the Africa Cup before this one, which was in March last year.
You mean 2020, the one in Cape Town?
The one in Cape Town.
Yeah, the one in Cape Town. Yes, okay, so that one was in the December of 2020?
Yes, December.
You still sat with Alistair in the commentary box, right?
Yes, I did, yes.
You guys should go and watch those IFSC videos of the final. It's really interesting. You got to learn a lot about not only holds and climbing. Alistair was doing the commentary with some of the competitors. KP was one of them. Go and have a listen. Can you remember which one you commented on?
It was definitely one of the finals, the ladies' final, and I think the men's final as well. Yeah.
How was it sitting in the commentary box? A little bit something different, huh?
So commentating was a bit of a new thing for me, because I don't really consider myself a very good speaker, but just being able to share as a climber, like to speak about, and as a competitor to speak on behalf of the people competing, to speak about what's going through their minds and how we look at climbing when we are competing. And Alistair made it so easy as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's super, super easy to chat to. As a competitor, how often do you engage with your Sankef athletes representative?
If I'm being honest, I never knew who it was until possibly last year, December, yeah. No, not last year, 2020 December, after the Africa Cup, when Catherine told me she was the representative. And I was like, what? I didn't even know we had one in this country.
That's a problem.
It is. But she, apparently other people do know about her and that we do have one, and some people have been communicating with her. I know Chris had been communicating with her quite a bit when he was still here. And yeah.
Is there something that you would have wanted to say to your athlete's representative? Maybe like something about the competition, how disputes are raised, anything like that?
Not really. I've never laid a dispute claim. I've never had any issues with anything of a sort. Most of the issues I've had, they've been solved really quickly. It's always been like draw failures or something, or maybe spinning holds. But that's easy to dispute and everyone sees, and I don't have to go lay a claim. But I wouldn't say there's anything I want to raise. I think the system works quite well. It's the same system that IFSC use. And they are succeeding with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, last question. I won't keep you here too long. Something I've been asking around, why, KP, do you think competition climbing is important?
I think it's great to get kids into the sport. That's how I started climbing. I saw a wall at my school And then I tried it once or twice and they told me about competitions. I was like, sure, I want to do that. Then after that, when I was 13, I made my first nationals and I was excited about that. And that's really what kept me in the sport. I think it's great for kids to learn about being alone in a space and learning to work out solving problems by yourself. But one thing that I find that climbing competitions have that no other sport has is the community. Even with the people that you're competing against. I mean, we just saw the men all walk out right now and look at the boulders together. They're all sitting there with their competitors, with people from other clubs and things, just saying, hey, what are you going to do over here? What do you think of this move? Sharing beta, sharing ideas and thoughts about the climbs. And I don't think you can really find that in any other sport. And that sort of camaraderie, even with people who are your competitors, people that you are climbing against, that you want to beat, hopefully. It's such a great thing to have, and it's such a beautiful thing about our sport. And that's why I think it's so important.
Okay, we're back with KP. He just made his route-setting Instagram profile right now for the purposes of this recording, obviously. Where can we find you on Instagram?
Okay, it's industrial. That's not it. It's athlete.industrial. Yes.
At athlete.industrial.
Yes.
Okay, so for that, I need to ask you at least one more question. I know that you have a very cool hobby. Someone told me that you are a performer. Tell me about you and your performing.
There's not really much to tell. I actually just graduated from a music performance degree. And right now I'm just writing some songs, seeing where that takes me. And then hopefully I'll have an album out by the end of next year.
What kind of performance is it?
The degree itself focuses on everything from the being on stage to off stage to business and all of that. For our final project, we had to write a bunch of songs, and then we went into a real studio and recorded them, and then performed a mock album launch, which was quite great. Yeah.
How do I get you to talk to me about opera singing?
I'm actually classically trained, so I can maybe give you some pointers here and there. I'm more into contemporary music. I'm not actually sure on a genre just yet, but yeah.
Thank you so much, KB. Check him out at athlete.industrial.
Yes.
Okay, so we spoke a little bit during our first interview about your route setting, and let's start with, I like to ask the question to some of my guests, where do you see yourself in the climbing community?
That's a very difficult question.
We can come back to it if you like.
No, I think I can handle it. Where do I see myself in the climbing community? I see myself as sort of it's going to sound very offensive to everyone older than 25.
That means me.
I kind of see myself as that old guy that's just done all the hard climbing in his life and now is just enjoying the climbing. So I've kind of settled down. Like every now and then I'll try something hard, but I'm very content with climbing the easy stuff and more about really trying to build up the community. The younger climbers, trying to make climbers stronger and I really want to see climbers going outdoors and just having fun and enjoying the sport for what it is.
All right. I wanted to speak to you about the industrial athlete, this Instagram profile that you've opened. We have a recording actually of you opening it, which is very cool. It's like the beginning of something.
Thank you for being there. Thank you for encouraging it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about what is it? What's your vision for it?
So pretty much it's sort of like a catalog of just a few of the stuff that I've set. And my idea behind it is to sort of do like a sort of show people what I actually do and what settings like when I give people like beta to some of my more popular climbs or what I think are my favorite climbs. And just really put out my setting brand, really. Just have a place to showcase it.
Which is what? If you had to do the elevator pitch for your setting brand, what would that be?
I should know this a little bit better. Yeah. I'd say my setting brand is pretty much me and how I climb and how I, well, I kind of see my setting as an art form. So it's a me showcasing my art, and that's it. Or pretty much I put a lot of myself in my setting and what I do. So I try and show, and I'm trying to show that in the setting and what I do. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. It's definitely, it looks like a piece of art on the wall. You can see when you've said something. It looks amazing. It looks like you've used all the best holes in the gym. What is your Instagram handle?
At industrial.athlete. Yes.
Cool.
No, athlete.industrial. Yes. It's the opposite. I don't know.
Where do you see that going in 5 years?
So my idea for it is to sort of turn it into like, this is, an influencer page. So I want to post lots of people, videos of people climbing. I want to start maybe moving on to, maybe doing longer videos, showing people the setting process. Mm. And then maybe even later starting a YouTube channel as well. Just focusing on climbing as well, maybe projecting some routes, sort of how Eric Carlson Bouldering does it, how they do their setting videos and their projecting videos as well. Mm-hmm. And then also maybe turning in the industrial athlete into a bigger brand and having other setters join in as well.
It does kind of sound like you're living the climber's life, you know? You're setting and you're climbing and you're doing all the things that everyone wants to do. How do people go about doing that?
It's not easy.
Is it ever?
Yeah. I think one thing that I am not so great at is that I set too much, which does hinder my climbing performance quite a bit. I'm not able to train a lot because of how often I'm setting, but it's kind of fine because the setting keeps me kind of strong. Mm. I just have to make sure that I keep up with my conditioning and I just work on my weaknesses every now and then. And like naturally I go through ups and downs. But I think the main thing is just really enjoying it and having a passion for it. And then just trying hard when you can. That's pretty much it. And having a really great group of people around you as well. Mm. But that's not a hard thing to do around climbers. Mm.
Maybe this is a bit on the nose. Mm. How do you fund a lifestyle like this?
Ooh, I work almost 9 to 15 hours a day.
Sure, that's
pretty
a long
much
time.
It.
How do you find that there are similarities between your setting and your music?
Quite a lot. The way in music we work a lot with like themes and motifs. So I tend to do the same in my setting as well. You'll see, you'll get like, every now and then I'll do like a certain move hand sequence. Mm. And then a few moves later, I'll do it the opposite way. And then I'll do it the back again. I'll do it opposite. Like there's that white 16 at City Rock that you really like. The one that goes, that's really exposed.
I love that one so much.
So next to it, right on top of the same anchor, there's a green 22. Pretty much the whole thing, once you get to the top, is you hold a pocket side pull, then you go into a pocket undercling on the right, pocket Gaston on the left, then pocket Gaston on the right again. Then you do the whole sequence on the other side. Then you do the whole sequence on the other side. And it's like playing around with movements like that. And then also just learning how to flow things together as well. So we talk about in performing always keeping energy moving. So never staying stagnant. And I kind of incorporated that in my setting as well. Like never trying my best never to have 2 feet on the same plane, because it kind of stops the flow of movement. Mm. One, if you always have 1 foot that's high, it's always like an uncomfortable stop, almost like an open cadence, as we say. Anyone who knows music will, yeah, please like this stuff and encourage me. it kind of feels unfinished.
Okay.
Yeah, as soon as you put both feet, it's almost like you're standing. So it feels like a full stop almost if we talk about sentences. Yeah.
Do you then also plan rests in between?
I am, I wouldn't say I'm super against it, but I don't like putting rests in my roots. You might have noticed. I like to keep them nice and consistent. I generally try and start easier and then like get harder in the middle and then maybe ease off at the top, or just continually get easier. Continue to get harder, sorry. But I try not to put rests, but every now and then especially on the harder stuff, sometimes you just need like a little breather. But yeah. Incorporating rest is also like making sure that it's not that full stop and feel more like a comma.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So from Instagram,
mm-hmm.
there are a number of people that would like to know if you'll ever compete again.
From my life too. So I retired from competing in 2019, was it?
For some context, KP, how old are you right now? Let's just get it out there.
I'm at the ripe old age of 24.
And you retired 3 years ago. Yeah. Okay.
It hurts in my lower back. I think, as much as I love competing, and I really do love competing, I think I'm very much a performer, and I love being in front of people. And I think competing really encouraged that. And I think that's the aspect that I love most about it. And I do miss it. I was actually joking around with a friend of mine, Alistair Stubbs, who's actually my roommate. He's also been out of competing for quite some time. And he was also thinking about maybe starting up again. And I was like, I might come out of retirement next year just to feel out where the competition is. But I feel like it's been so long since I've been competing that I might need to actually maybe cut down on the setting a bit and start training and get a lot stronger than what I am.
Mm. That thing about other people watching you climb, you seem to be so excited about it, like the performance. And honestly, it just gives me anxiety. When I know there's an audience, oh my goodness, I sweat so much.
Yeah,
it's like anxiety inducing. And you have to get over it, because what are you going to do when there's people around not climb? Or only climb when there's people around? Neither of those are like sustainable for climbing.
I think being on stages a lot has taught me to sort of turn that anxiety into energy, and use that as motivation to get me up the wall. I heard this from someone super smart once. They said, let me see if I can get this right. I don't remember who it is, so. Actually, you can just say it's me, so I sound smarter. the difference between, they asked a bunch of pro athletes and just regular people who do whatever sport this was in. It's like, do you get nervous before a competition or before you play a game? And the normal people say, yes, I do get nervous. Then the pros would say, no, I don't get nervous, but I do get super excited. So the difference between being nervous and excited is purely just your perspective on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How do we, so for a day job, I speak in public as well. And I find that my palms get sweaty, but I like it. You know, it keeps me on my toes, and it keeps my brain firing at all cylinders. How do you do that in climbing? Mm. How do you change that perspective from nervous into? So I know how to do it from the performance aspect, but how does one translate that into while you're climbing?
I think, so getting nervous and getting sweaty and then being like, being excited and being like, okay, what's going to happen next? Where are we going? Can kind of work when you're climbing a climb that you've never really tried before. Maybe something slightly above your climbing grade. You look at the next move and you're like, oh my goodness, I don't know if I could do it. For me, I think it's because I spend so much time forerunning and it's okay for me to fool around. I'd like those climbs don't, it doesn't really matter if I send them or not. So I can do stupid stuff like jump across the room or try go feet first when I can't. The main thing for me is sort of being there like, oh my, sort of getting into the audience's perspective as well, being like, oh, they're excited. Do they think I can do this? And they're like, oh, do I think I can do this? Let's see. And then pretty much giving it your all.
So it's a real focus on the self-talk in that moment. If we break it down to that, that moment where I guess it's a choice in perspective. You can either go with a, oh my goodness, I don't know if I can do this. To changing that self-talk to the, yeah, I can do this. Yeah. They think I can do this. I can totally do this. Which is a skill like any other. Negative self-talk gets us down and positive self-talk, you know, boosts us up. I need to practice that skill. Yeah.
And also maybe like for those of you who also stand in front of people and do whatever it is you do, like the same way you'd prepare to speak, maybe just translate that to how you would prepare before you climb. One thing that I'd find is that I'd really get into a good flow state when I'm at comps. And then I sort of transition that into my music. So not only has my music helped my climbing, but my climbing has helped my music as well. And then also just translating it outside of the comp climbing to climbing outdoors as well and just regular climbing inside the gym, getting my mind straight, focusing, looking at the route, and then literally just trying to enjoy every move for what it is by itself and enjoy the climbing and not really trying to think about anything else.
That's a wonderful tool in being present, that trying to enjoy every move for what it is. Amazing. So you're effectively trying to make a business out of this, this Instagram profile, charging for setting and so forth. How are you charging at the moment?
So I won't say the actual amount, but I charge per hour, and it does... So I charge per hour, and it doesn't work out to be that much at the moment, purely because of how much gyms can afford and are willing to pay route setters to come set for them.
Do you mean they're not willing to pay a lot for route setters?
So I've got quite a good rapport with most gyms in the country. Most of them know that I'm a good setter. Customers really like my stuff. I think in all the gyms that I've worked at, I've gotten probably the best feedback. And it's kind of difficult because, first of all, yes, I am starting out, and route setting is still quite a little niche thing in the country. Most people, there's a lot of people that get paid purely through memberships to the gym. But trying to turn it into something where it's sustainable to live off of is a little bit difficult, especially because you have those people who will come in and do it for basically free or for almost nothing. Just because, depending on the gym's financial situation or how they feel about route setters and what they're worth. let me not get in trouble. how they feel the root setters are worth. It'll be sometimes they would rather have someone who's cheaper, whose roots aren't as great, who doesn't spend as much time, and rather deal with that than just fork out a lot of money.
So if someone wanted to get a quote from you to come and set, how do they reach out to you?
So just through my Instagram, or if ever you see me in the gym, just talk to me. So I offer lots of things, not just setting. I do a little bit of wall maintenance. I write reports for people on their gyms and their walls after setting. I'll wash your holds. I'll organize your stuff. Anything really that you need.
So even for people maybe for a home wall?
I do home walls as well. Mm-hmm. I've done, I did about three home walls last month, which was quite great. And then also, I do root setting clinics as well and charge for those. So I can teach you how to set at your home wall. If you have a gym and you want someone to teach your root setters how to set or just help them become better, I'm willing to come in and have a hand. I'm willing to travel across the country as well to do some work as well.
Amazing. Thank you. So just to clarify, you charge per hour, not per root. Do you change that depending on the gym that you go to and kind of how they work, or is that set for you?
So it does depend on the gym. I won't put names out, but that's right. So I work differently with each gym depending on what suits both of us best. So some gyms I try my best to get the hourly rate because I feel like that's how I give the best service. I feel like it's a little bit irresponsible of me to charge by the route because it makes me feel like I'm just going to quickly put up as many as I can and I'd not really spend time, waste time, air quotes, checking that they're good and they're working quite
well. So it's a quality thing of why you...
It's a quality thing because I actually spend, I set really fast, which is very good because I don't spend a lot of time sitting on the rope and I don't waste time just standing on the mats going and I spend most of my time forerunning and actually climbing the stuff, which I find works better. But if you're working per route, if you're paying per route, especially with newer setters watching how I work and them not knowing how to properly forerun it, always it tends to end up them quickly just putting up stuff, then climbing them, being like, okay, that works, and just walking away quickly.
So just like a rubber stamp situation. You must know, you're effectively a small business owner, right?
Yes, yes.
You must know that you've limited what you can sell if you're charging per hour because you've only got so many hours of your time.
Yes.
And some of them need to be for sleeping and some of them need to be for eating, just as far as like a human function is concerned. So charging per hour also does limit you in a certain way.
Yes.
And do you have a way to combat that maybe going forward?
So at the moment, at the moment I am charging less than what I would like to be earning. And that my idea is that to go to as many gyms as possible and then try and show them what I can do. And I promise you all the gyms that I've worked with can come to you and say I'm worth far more than what I was charging. And then hopefully soon I can actually raise my hourly rate.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for sitting with us again.
That's a pleasure.
If you enjoyed that podcast, send us some love by donating money or telling people about the Send Space podcast. Check out our Patreon for ad-free episodes and extra content. There's some good stuff on there. You can become a Patreon by once-off donation or regular contribution. It's totally up to you. please get hold of us. All our info is on thesendspace.org. If you haven't noticed, we like to chat. Thanks for listening all the way until the end. We appreciate it. Don't forget your helmet and rate, review, and share this podcast.